first in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Ooh, baby, oh, baby, what a happy, happy opener that is. You know, I could be feeling a little down in the mouth, and I hear that theme from Carmen, and I just perk right up. I mean, how can you not be upbeat hearing that? We have a lot to talk about today. Karen Cataline with you on the Thursday edition of Spouting Off here on 1590 AM WSMN and 95.3 FM. So proud to have WSMN as our flagship station here Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. And there's been a lot on my mind. If you'd like to chime in, and of course, usually you set things up and then you ask for calls, but you know that in this first segment, we're always open to callers, whether they call or not. We know we have listeners, they just don't always call. That's okay. That's your prerogative. But if you'd like to call, 603-816-1590, just like the station 1590, and you can call from anywhere around the country if you happen to be listening live. So we heard breaking news, I guess it was yesterday, that Britain is closing the door. At least I think so. You know how when you are coming out of a prison, you really hope that you're not being lied to? But one of my favorite sites, the Liberty Daily, reported yesterday that it's over. The COVID hysteria insanity is over because they're getting rid of all of the mandates, the mask mandates, the lockdowns, we're going to fire you if you don't get a vax, all of it. They are suspending all of it. And that's part of what it took, is just that kind of thing. No longer is that article even on top because there's so, so much going on. But I have some comments about this, as I often do. And that's this. We're seeing some wins here for liberty lovers around the globe, people who remember what liberty was like and are not in denial about the fact that liberty, individual liberty, personal liberty is under attack all over the free world in a way that we have never seen before. And if you see the virulence that is being that it's being done with, and you see that, in fact, there's been a concerted effort to co-opt, corrupt the largest spheres of influence in the country. There is such a plan to co-opt these spheres of influence because that's what changes and manipulates public opinion. You've heard me rant endlessly about the First Amendment, about free speech, about freedom of expression. And I will continue to do so because, as the opener says, we couldn't have liberty without it. Differences of opinion. When you have dictators telling you what you're supposed to think or telling you that what you think is somehow dangerous to the public and you must be shut down for everyone's own good, you're dealing with propaganda, pure and simple. But here's the thing. The totalitarians are taking a few hits right now. You heard in the opening news that Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin are holding the line on totalitarian government, which is spectacular. That's more than a lot of deep state establishment Republicans have been doing. So God love liberty, courage, and actually limiting one's own power. That's for the common good, ladies and gentlemen. The exact opposite of what they tell you. It's for the common good to restrain your own power in order that other people may be allowed to exercise their God-given rights to be in charge of their own life. We are not talking about things that hinder other people's liberty. It is one of the biggest damn lies that if you do not do as you are told, people will die. That's propaganda. It's not true. It's not true on so many levels. We're not even going to go into how it's not true. But what I'm getting at here is that when the totalitarians, and I don't even call them all on the left, although they started out that way, we have a lot of enablers to totalitarians right now. Sad but true. This is separating the men from the boys right now. They're a lot like caged animals, and they don't go quietly into that good night. No, they don't. What I am going to, I don't generally give predictions because, especially these days, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm watching it unfold along with you. But I've been a watcher of this for long enough to see that they never acknowledge that they were wrong. They never acknowledge they were caught in a lie after lie. They never acknowledge that they've been pulling the wool over people's eyes, and nor do they ever, very ever, hardly ever, hand back power to people they've robbed it from. They don't do that. So I think they're getting ready to flip the script. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing little noises about people on Liberty side saying, I'm even seeing the left. They're even telling the truth now because they're so disgusted with Joe Biden and they're finally criticizing him. No, 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 no. How could you be so naive? When you win just a little, that's when you have to be extra vigilant. I have the perfect song for you from 1940s. I'm just going to play it because Art was kind enough and wonderful enough at the last minute to pull this audio sound from me. Let's hear it.
You believe me when I said I love you, when you know I've been a liar all my life.
You've had that reputation since you was a youth.
You must have been insane to think I'd tell you the truth.
How could I believe you when you said we'd marry?
Why, you know I'd rather hang than have a wife. I know I said I'd make you mine.
Now wouldn't you know that I would go for that old line?
How could you believe me when I said I love you, when you know I've been a liar?
You sure have been a liar.
A double-crossing liar.
A double-crossing liar.
I'm a doggone cheating liar.
There you go. How can you believe me when you when I said I loved you, when you know I've lied? Wait a minute. Can you believe when I tell you I love you, when you know all my life I have lied? So once you see that somebody's been lying, 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 lying to you about such important issues, you don't turn right around and say, oh yeah, let's believe them now. No. Here's what I think is going to happen, and this is a deadly example. Okay? With the tacit help of the media, what we have here, what we had at the beginning, almost two years ago into the COVID nightmare that has been used to bludgeon people into submission to, put the free world on notice that personal liberty and liberty in general is no longer to be expected. They want to change our relationship with government, that they are our our betters, our leaders, our dictators. We are now subjects. We are now slaves. We are now serfs, and we are to do as we are told. That could work in places like Venezuela, but it don't work in America. And evidently, it stopped working in Britain, who separated out from the EU because they want liberty too on so many levels. So at the beginning of the coronavirus, what we saw and what we now know, even though a lot of people still refuse to acknowledge, is that the deaths were exaggerated, or some ugly, despicable, and evil cases, the virus was sent into the most vulnerable populations. We know this is true. We watched it happen. There was an empty ship in the Hudson River ready to take patients for COVID. But what did they do on the orders of Andrew Despicable Cuomo? They sent infected patients into the most vulnerable in our society, nursing homes, and killed thousands of them. Then they ramped up the death numbers to constantly push on the public for 2 years. Do you know people who still wear rags on their face in the grocery store? I do. We've been living this. How do they do it? They're conditioning people to fear. You better do as we say, or you're going to die. You're going to kill your grandmother. And guess what? They go about killing your grandmother and blaming it on you. So first, they exaggerated the deaths. Now that we are seeing deaths from the vaccine itself, injuries that are devastating, they're covering them up. So first, they exaggerate the deaths, then they cover them up. You see, you got to be one step ahead of the propagandists. Now, I could be wrong about all this, and call me. I have time to take your call, 603-816-1590. If you disagree, I'm willing to, you know what? We are the people who love dissent and discussion and debate. It's in my genes. Not my J-E-A-N-S, but my G-E-N-E-S. I don't need gene therapy. I need debate therapy. But nevertheless, this is my hunch of what is going on. They're going to flip the script, and now they're going to tell you that the deaths that you are seeing, don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain. People aren't really dying of vaccines. So what's really happening? It is stunning to believe that first they exaggerate deaths. I repeated myself, sorry. And then they cover them up in order to continue manipulating you and propagandizing you. The article among many that I use as a reference is Federal Government Mum on Non-COVID Mortality Spike in Americans 18 to 49. Now, let's use as an example. I'm not saying I know what killed the comedian and actor Bob Saget. Have you noticed that people are dropping dead all over the place, but you never find out what they died of? Now, Candace Owens, a true firebrand, she said she thought Bob Saget probably died of either the vax or the booster. Now, I don't know if that's true, but they did call her, the leftist propagandists went out of their way to call her a right-wing conspiracy fearmonger because they said it's totally unfounded and untrue. But if you look at every article about Bob Saget that professes to tell you what he actually died of, when you read the article, it tells you what he didn't die of. It says, well, there was no foul play, and they didn't find drugs in his system, but we're not going to know for 10 to 14 weeks what he died of. And what do you bet? You'll never know what he died of, or it will be covered up. Now, do I know what he died of? Heck no. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a forensic scientist. But when things get censored, covered up, and people evade the question, I'm always suspicious. Now, there was the great Vaughn Miller, the NFL player. He died of seizures. Well, seizures are part of the side effects from the vax, but we're not allowed to know that, are we? So my question, my point here, and then I got to take a break, is keep your own counsel. Be discerning, even about what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you I have all the answers. I'm telling you that science means we get to ask questions. We get to doubt. We get to question everything. That's what the left told us. Question everything. Question them. I'm Karen Cataline. We're going to be back with our first guest, Tom Mullen, right after this. Stay tuned. You're on 1590 AM WSMN and Spouting Off.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Hey guys, it's me, Isabella Gomez, filling in for Smokey Bear, because he's got more to say than just...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Like, if you're outside enjoying a barbecue, don't let a hamburger distract you from fire safety. Make sure you aren't dumping your hot coals or ashes onto the ground, because that could start a wildfire. So take wildfire prevention seriously, and let's save the world one day at a time. Juntos con Smokey Bear, podemos hacerlo. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back to Spouting Off. You're listening to Spouting Off. I'm Karen Cataline, and I'm telling you, you know, it's been, what, 5, 6, 7 years or whatever it was when I came up with that kind of cheeky title, Spouting Off, but boy, has it been apropos. Spouting Off gets a very bad rap. Spouting Off means you say what's on your mind, you don't censor yourself, and you let the chips fall where they may. You say, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong about this. Here's what I'm thinking. What about you? That, ladies and gentlemen, is America. We're going to run right in and tell you about our very first guest here on Spouting Off, host of, oddly enough, the Tom Mullen Talks Freedom podcast. He's the author of Where Do Conservatives and Liberals Come From? Oh, I'd like to know that. And Whatever Happened to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness? And A Return to Common Sense, Reawakening Liberty and the Inhabitants of America. He also ghost wrote several New York Times bestsellers. I wonder if that's why, because the New York Times hates conservatives. Tom Mullen, welcome to Spouting Off here on WSMN. You're with Karen Cataline.
Thanks, Karen. Great to be here.
It's great to talk to you. So we're going to dive right into, first off, you know, I really want to know, where do conservatives and liberals come from?
Well, there's a long answer to that. It's not too long. It's about 177 pages, I think, the last time I looked. In that book, I try to, you know, distinguish that there's not just two different worldviews at play here, but there's actually three. And the two most dominant ones are not really all that consistent with what's in the Declaration of Independence. So if that piques anyone's curiosity, they're welcome to go check out the book.
Give us one example of what's the difference, you know?
Where do they come from?
How do liberals get to be liberals?
Well, liberals really, the father of modern liberalism is a cat named Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who lived and wrote in the 1700s. And when you listen to any liberal today, from, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to President Biden to Kamala Harris, when you hear them speak about what's wrong in their view with society, they're almost always practically quoting this Rousseau directly. His ideas are so pervasive. And I'm not saying that they're carrying his books around in their back pocket, but he captured that way of looking at the world, which is that there's some inherent problem with private property and that it creates inequality, and that the government's job is to fix this terrible inequality that proceeds, you know, directly from just the existence of private property itself. But this is really, you know, at the root of the liberal worldview. And that's why it doesn't matter, you know, how much you level the playing field, it's never going to be enough. They're always going to be in this mad quest to make everybody equal, and equal rights, as we all know, are two very different things.
You know what, Tom, you remind me of one of my numerous analogies. And that is, years ago in the 70s, there was a guru named Guru Maharaji of the Divine Light Mission. And his big thing was to divest yourself of all material goods. But what was so interesting about him is he said, get rid of all your material possessions, but give them all to me. And he owned like 8 Rolls Royces. It is astounding to me that the conflict of interest is not more obvious to the average person who falls for this, when they're always the ones that are cleaning up the spoils of robbing and divesting everyone else of their property.
Yeah, I mean, this terrible idea, it appeals to our worst emotions, envy, you know, and covetousness. But even in my book, An Anti-State Christmas, I talk about It's a Wonderful Life. And if you really look at it without any emotions, I mean, Potter is the hero of that film. George Bailey is the scam artist. He's the guy that runs a fractional reserve, you know, banking or savings and loan company, tries to make everyone a homeowner. Supposedly he's this selfless person. Of course, they have to bail him out during the Depression while Potter saves the rest of the town. And of course, they have to bail him out at the end again. So here's this do-gooder, you know, miserable the whole movie, and they want everyone to be like that.
How about that? That is such a good point. A perfect example of the discernment that I'm suggesting. Don't believe anything you hear and question everything. Let's talk a little more about income inequality. Is constantly blaming people who have worked for something that they didn't earn it. Remember, Obama, you didn't build that. We did. Therefore, you're not entitled to the fruits of your own labor. Speak to that, if you would.
Well, that's another idea that comes right out of Rousseau, believe it or not. If it's either the social contract or the discourses on inequality, I refer to them both in my book. I refer right to that statement in my book. And of course, you can never have income equality, and we shouldn't have income equality. I did not want to do the kinds of things in my life that could have made me a billionaire. And maybe if I did, I still wouldn't have been. But, I mean, people have different priorities in life. Some people want to do one thing. Some people are laser focused on creating a company and making it bigger. You know, even if you could level off everybody for a split second and everybody is completely equal, they all have the same amount of money, 3 seconds later, that would no longer be true, because it's just the inherent nature that we're all different. We all have different talents and we all have different desires. And I don't think most public school teachers or firemen, you know, set out to be billionaires. They knew they weren't going to be billionaires when they went into that line of work. So it's, you know, these are choices that we all make. It's just insane to try and preach this. And deep down, I think everybody knows it's insane. It appeals to our emotions. And like I said, not our noble ones.
Yes, and I want to drill a little deeper on this question, because if it were merely that these leftist socialist communists thought that things were unequal, and they tried to get people to give their stuff away voluntarily, which is what the Guru Maharaji did. It would be tragic because they're being lied to and deceived, and frankly, coercion or deceit is still some level of force. It's not really truly voluntary. But wealth redistributors, otherwise known as socialists and communists, never, ever do it, want to separate you from your property voluntarily. No, they intend to do it by force, by tyranny. They couldn't have socialism without it. And of course, it's a giant lie that it's going to be better for everyone. We know, of course, that Klaus Schwab, I think, was the one. This horrible, these names, I'm telling you, people who are having control over other people's lives. And he is suddenly famous for saying, "You will own nothing, but you will be happy." Sounds an awful lot like a Nazi phrase, doesn't it? You will own nothing and you will be happy. Really? He's going to tell us who's going to be happy and who's not? And who's going to get the spoils of all of those property that he steals and robs from others? Guess what? His buddies are going to get it, because he's not going to restrain his desire for power. So it's a giant gaslighting lie, is it not?
Well, yeah. I mean, throughout history, everybody who convinced people that it was sinful or immoral to keep the fruits of their own labor always ended up with, you know, the proceeds themselves, like you said, like the Maharishi. If you believe Joe Stalin lived in a two-room apartment with another family of his comrades, and I've got a bridge here in Middleport to sell you.
You know,
in Venezuela today, the richest, all the money's in one family, the ruling family. So,
and we've seen it again and again. We saw Imelda Marcos in her hundreds of pairs of shoes. We've seen all the leftists in America who demand other people wear rags on their face, but they don't. The rules never apply to them, ever.
Fly to their private, to their climate conferences and their private jets. And no masks, no social distancing. Not for us. Just for you peasants. Just for you,
please. Not that they do anything. They know they don't do anything, but they're going to try to convince you that they do something.
Right.
Not convince you. See, even I do it. This is a language problem that we have, that they're asking us. They don't ask, they force. And this is the problem that I have again and again and again, as we fall prey to the language that says they're asking us. They're never asking, they're forcing. If they would ask and have no be an acceptable answer, I wouldn't have a problem with them. But no is never an acceptable answer to a communist, ever. Sorry.
Well, it can. It goes against human nature. People invariably, and even in communist Russia and the Soviet Union, I mean, what allowed them to survive was the thriving black market. I mean, it's just impossible for this system to work. In fact, by 1921, they were ready to hang Lenin because they were starving that fast. And then the West came in and kind of bailed them out, foolishly thinking they would keep their word about investing in the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union turned around and nationalized everything and ripped them off. So, you know, and there's always this silly idea that there's something noble about this system, that, oh, we just haven't had the right people running it. It's not a noble system. There's nothing noble that says that, you know, you should work so that I could have something. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense.
It's unjust in every way.
It's
the big lie. It's saying, here's some candy, little girl, just get in my car. That's what it is. It's the big lie. Tom, let's bump up to make it relevant to now. And we're seeing, I don't know if this is a direction you want to go, but we're seeing the elites pulling the strings and robbing people of their property in some of the most despicable ways, One of them is inflation, which is often called the cruelest tax of all because you don't have any control over it. Your money is worth less. They want to rob people of their buying power. They're printing money up the wazoo. And furthermore, they appear to be doing it on purpose. Speak to that if you would you?
Well, that's the subject of my new book. It's The Fed Stupid.
Oh, wow.
And in it, I really make an appeal to people, even to people on the left who say that they oppose income inequality. Look, you're never going to get complete equality, but if you want a lot less inequality, then look at the source of the problem. It's the Federal Reserve. It's inflation. Where did the problem start? It started in the 1970s when they cut the dollar off from gold. That's where you can trace the huge divergence. You know, they always like to blame Reagan. Reagan's, you know, piddly little deregulation was supposedly caused all this inequality. The problem is it starts in the 1970s.
Nixon, didn't it? We went off the gold standard during Nixon.
Yeah, and then the effects probably didn't really start to be felt on this subject, inequality, believe it or not, until the Carter administration. So explain that through it's all capitalism's fault. No, the Federal Reserve is a wealth transfer program. As you said, it's an insidious one because it steals silently. You know, you still got the money in the bank, but the purchasing power has been transferred not to poor people, to rich people. So
to rich and
everybody should oppose this.
So the left that's been screaming about it are actually contributing to the problem by supporting big government, big feds, big taxes, and big power. And they don't know it. There's nothing uglier than trying to appeal to the best hopes and interests of people and finding out that they're doing the exact opposite of what they're trying to accomplish. It's a tactic, isn't it? It's a tactic in order to appeal to people's virtue signaling and what have you. But it's ugly. It's saying, you know, you'll help your fellow man by just following us. No, you won't. No, you won't. Tell us about your book and your podcast. We got enough time here. We got a minute or two so people can follow you and find you all over the internet.
Sure. Well, the book, you could actually download a PDF copy for free or buy a paperback or both by going to itsthefedstupid.com. And basically what the book argues is, you know, politicians in this scenario where we've got the New Deal regulatory structure, we've got the completely fiat dollar, politicians don't make much difference to the economy, Republican or Democrat. Voting has not worked. Because the Federal Reserve wields so much power that any policies by politicians are rather trivial compared to the tidal wave of economic forces that are released by the Federal Reserve. And they not
only
cause
only about 20 seconds. I'm sorry. Tell everybody how they can find you so they can learn more.
It's at TomMullenTalksFreedom.com.
Beautiful.
And to get the book, go to ItsTheFedStupid.com.
ItsTheFedsStupid.com. Tom Mullen, say that one more time. Talks Freedom. There it is. TomMullenTalksFreedom.com. That's what we got to be talking, Tom. And thank you so much for joining us. Tom Mullen there, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll tell you about our very next guest, Mark Marilyn, Bearline, right after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to Spouting Off here on WSMN.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived in Philadelphia. Local time is 3:05 p.m. and the temperature is 67 degrees. At this time, you are now free to use your cellular devices.
You know that feeling when you get to turn your phone on after the plane lands? You can have that feeling every time you drive. Make sure your cell phone is stowed away whenever you are behind the wheel.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. Boy, this hour goes fast. From 1 to 2, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then we do another show on Friday. Sometimes we repeat one of these shows on Friday. I don't know what we'll do tomorrow, but you can go to KarenCataline.com, and there you will find another episode of Spouting Off on Fridays, same time, 1 p.m. Before we get to our next guest, all of you know that MyPillow does not have a big box store or shopping channels because they've all been affected by the cancel culture. Mike Lindell has now been told that he can't even bank anymore. That's not America. That's not a free market. They're saying, we don't like your politics, so we're not going to let you do business. Want to support Mike and get a good pillow and get a whole bunch more? Right now, you can get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow, with a classic standard pillow, regularly $69.98, now is only $19.98. Amazing. And all of his prices have been slashed because he's not paying a bunch of advertising. And all you got to do is call 1-800-867-0416. That's 800-867-0416. Use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. And he's got over 200 items, in fact, more than that, that you can go buy, look at, and order. Support Mike Lindell and support free markets and private small businesses by going to 1-800-867-0416 and using the promo code RAM. Well, we have our next guest on the line, and his name is Mark Behrlein. He's a professor emeritus of English at Emory University. I know someone who graduated from there. And an editor at First Things, where he hosts a podcast twice a week. He's the author of 5 books, including The Dumbest Generation, How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30. His commentaries and reviews have appeared in publications, including The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. Not exactly conservative publications, most of them. Welcome, Mark Behrlein, to Spouting Off. You're on WSMN.
I'm glad to join you. Thank you.
I'm delighted to have you. You know, when you said the computer, this really piqued my interest. The digital age stupefies young Americans. Well, you know, I'm not so young anymore, and the digital age stupefies me for the simple reason, actually there's more complicated reasons, that we were told that computers would help us. Computers were more efficient than us. They could add, they could subtract, they could do things better than we can do. And what I find is that our kowtowing to computers has made everything, including commerce, more inefficient, more frustrating, more depersonalized, and a whole lot more. What do you think about that, just as a first question?
Well, I look at this in terms of generations, and the Dumbest Generation book, the first one came out in 2008, and you remember what they were saying about the millennials, these 15-year-olds in this Web 2.0 first decade of the 20th century. They're going to be amazing because they know these tools so well. They run circles around us old people with these devices in hand. And also they're ambitious. They're innovative. They are going to college in record numbers. They're so progressive. They helped elect the first African-American president in American history. And they're going to lead us into the 21st century with all these tools and techniques. That was what really prompted me to write the first book in 2008, because I thought it is not healthy for 15-year-olds to walk around with 250 pictures of themselves in their pocket.
No.
It's not healthy for them to be up all night sending 4,000 text messages a month. It's not good for them to have this 24/7 connectivity life. And it's going to give them false pictures of reality. And what you said is, wait a minute, I thought these computers were supposed to make them smarter. Well, I mean, they got all the universe of knowledge at their fingertips. Well, but that's not what the tools meant in the hands of 15-year-olds. The tools meant I can get in touch with other 15-year-olds. That was the draw. And I predicted back in 08, they're going to grow up and it's not going to go well for them. And that's why I have this book coming out now, The Dumbest Generation Grows Up. And what do we see? They're 33 years old. Do they write better? Do they do better math? Do they have better work skills? No. And when
you can't check out your groceries if the computer doesn't tell the person how much change they're supposed to give you because they can't add or subtract.
That's right. It's all the button does everything for them. They can't write because the computer does all the spell check and the grammatical corrections for them. But this doesn't help them. And what we see now is when they look at millennials who are now entering middle age, they are more depressed, anxious, narcissistic. They have high job dissatisfaction. They're not getting married. They're not having kids, forming families. Their patriotism levels are below 50, less than 50% of them regard themselves as patriots.
This is a socialist Marxist dream. Get them not to reproduce, get them not to have a family, get them not to be patriotic, emasculate the men. That's exactly what the left wants them to be.
And one way to bring revolutionary change to a country is to demoralize the citizenry. And one way to do that is get them when they're young and teach them your country is a guilty, shameful place. Your country has done horrible things to people at home and abroad for centuries. It's not worth defending. So, you know, a lot of millennials, they don't have any feelings of gratitude, of commitment to the nation. But the thing is, it doesn't make them happy. They're not happy. They're bitter. They're disappointed. And too many of them, this is where the dangerous part comes in. The subtitle of the new book is From Stupefied Youth to Dangerous Adults. They don't believe in anything deeply because we didn't give them God. We didn't give them country. We didn't give them great music and great movies and books and great traditions. We didn't give them any great heroes, lineages. So where do they go? They go toward things like Antifa. They go to social justice. They're going to march in the streets for Black Lives Matter. That's where they're finding purpose and meaning
and kneel,
in their lives.
Kneel before Zod.
That's right.
You know, just like the Superman movie. You know what I got to ask you, Mark, before it's too late?
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. You know, I ain't a millennial, that's for sure. And that's bad grammar. and I never know what are the years of a millennial. When were they born? I never know the answer to this. Please tell
roughly
me.
Roughly early 80s to late 90s. So the youngest millennials are maybe 23, 24 years old. The oldest ones are hitting 40.
Wow, that's a pretty big generation.
They are the first generation that grew up with tools, devices from childhood.
Well, why do they call them millennials if they were born? Oh, because they were coming of age in the millennium. Is that what
right.
it is?
Right.
Okay. Well,
right.
That's
and there were all these
kind of
books,
confusing.
The next greatest generation, or here come the millennials. And
no.
There were all these cheerleaders out there. And I wrote this book, and it got quite a bit of notice.
Yeah.
I was on a lot of TV shows. And everyone was coming back by saying, oh, you're just an old grouch. People have always complained about the kids. you're just get off my lawn kind of guy. You're a reactionary conservative. And my generation, the boomers, they didn't want to play the role of elder. That they were part of the youth movement in the 60s. And so they grew up and, you know, I'd have colleagues, you know, 50-year-old colleagues, professors who'd walk into class one day with a little ponytail and an earring on just to show how they were down with the
That's
kids.
That's so true. They did not want to grow up.
No,
that is
no,
so true. And they didn't wear socks and whatever. they just didn't want to. I've heard that the tail end of the baby boomer generation is called the Jones. The Jones generation. Is that true?
I haven't heard, but I'm willing to listen. You had Generation
I don't know.
X.
I don't know who names these things. X, Y, Z. I don't know. Let me ask you this. I have noticed that the generation that you're talking about, the millennials, which, you know, it's absolutely well-founded from a cultural standpoint. Certainly a lot of people don't fit the stereotype, and that's a good thing. But they seem to be wholly unconcerned about being surveilled by their government. Could you speak to that a little bit? They're just not concerned. You tell them they think you're paranoid, and they say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I have nothing to hide. Really?
Yeah. They grew up without privacy. You know, Mark Zuckerberg put it once, Facebook is making it so that you never have to be alone. So they would go into their bedrooms, shut the door, and that was not a quiet, isolated space. They opened up to the world. They wanted to build their network of friends. They love playing video games together with one another, with people across the world. So they never knew the wall of privacy around them. And they, you know, some of them are too clueless to realize how important it is in a liberal, open society to maintain rights of privacy. Leave people alone in their private lives. But no, they're willing to sign a petition with 2,000 other people to get one person fired from a job for telling a dumb racial joke in private. If we can get it online and post it, they like doxing people, posting people's private information.
Scary stuff. It's so intrusive.
This is the dangerous part, and they've grown up with this, and so they don't feel that get out of my life, leave me alone, don't tread on me. That's an American spirit.
And say
gone.
No, I don't want you to track me. I don't want to give you my birth date, my deepest, darkest thoughts. No, I mean, you know, there's cults that do that.
They don't care. I mean, the new book is called The Dumbest Generation Grows Up. One of the problems is they haven't really grown up. They're 33 years old and they're living in houses with three others. They're trying to reproduce that 90s TV show Friends, which was about 30-year-olds pretending they're still 19. Well, they had so much fun. There was together and Friends. Friends are so
boys,
important.
Right?
Yeah.
They're like the pajama boy. They're sitting there with their hot cocoa.
And from that computer screen, they can cause a lot of trouble.
You know what, Mark? I have one more question, and then I want to know, like, what are we going to do with these people? First off, I always feel a little uncomfortable when I make these broad generalizations because I love the idea that we be judged on our individualism, not whatever kind of group we belong to. But these are generational observations, and they help explain a lot of things. I think it's very helpful. So as long as we're hammering the millennials, here's another one, Mark, that I'd like you to comment on. What I notice from people when I go into a store, when I go deal with customer service, but especially in person, they cannot look you in the eye. They cannot interact with you in a human fashion. They're actually terrified. Most of them seem to have social anxiety disorder. because of all this computer. Speak about that, if you would.
Well, they've spent so much of their socializing through a screen.
Right.
And there's a certain protectiveness about that. And let's understand that conversation is an art. It has to be learned. You have to practice it. And you have to practice it with people who aren't just like you. They create a network of people just like themselves. You know, their own peer group. They all believe the same things. The conformity is very strong. They don't really know how to engage in a genial way with someone quite different from them. It's just a matter of not having done the practice. The art of conversation takes work.
It's as if they primed this whole generation for socialism, communism, which leads me to, I only have a couple minutes left till the end of the show.
Yep.
Well, they're in their middle age and they're still having a great impact with their social skills and whatever else. Again, a generality. What do we do about these people? What do we do?
I'm a little pessimistic because, you know, having kids, getting married and having kids and having plans settled down, you have to think about someone beside yourselves. You've got to sacrifice a little bit. That was often a way to make people grow up, in fact. It would make them a little more sober and thoughtful and circumspect, a little more responsible. If they're not doing this well into, you know, age 40, one-third of men will not, of millennial men will not be married, ever have been married by age 40. One-third. And there's no sign that that trend is slowing down. It's speeding up. So I don't know. I mean, we look at Generation Z. Generations like to rebel against the previous generation. Maybe they will react against it and say, we don't like all these social justice scold kind of people who are always looking over our shoulder to make sure we're not committing any thought crimes. They're not going to like that. But I don't know. And the pressure on Generation Z, you know, you go over to Dartmouth College. If you're a conservative kid at Dartmouth College, you're not gonna do very well. They're not very big on dissent. So I don't know if Z will be able to be successful rebels. This woke revolution is very powerful, and it's powerful in all the major institutions. We'll see what happens. I think the next year is going to have some very bizarre episodes in this country.
Well, we're watching it. We're seeing it. You can see it's really bizarre. I got dogs barking, people. I don't know if you can hear that in the background. They're having a cow over here because they think it's going to be really scary, too.
It's a very strange time.
It is a phenomenal. It's as if they were ticking time bombs, just waiting to go off. You know.
Well, I think the liberal elite, and most elites in this country are liberal. They run all the major institutions. They know that their liberalism has collapsed. They know that it just doesn't work, and that's why they're going, racism, racism. That's why they're slipping into this hysteria about democracy, democracy.
Mark Behrlein, I'm so sorry we have to leave it there. Find him online, B-A-U-E-R-L-E-I-N, Mark Behrlein. Thank you so much for joining us. That's all
Thank
we
you.
Have time for on this edition of Spouting Off. See us tomorrow at KarenCataline.com, 1 p.m. tomorrow. We'll be back next Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, when there will be so much to spout off about here on Spouting Off.